This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take fried catfish and barbecued ribs, and we're going to start to tell the economic story of next year's election. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Wednesday, the fourth day of November. Great to have you along, everybody, as always. I'm going to note for the record here as we get going that as of this writing, there are 369 days left until the 2016 elections. Between now and then, we're going to spend some time on this program on this idea that for as good as the American economy looks right now, and it does, with jobs being added and growth numbers decent, if not great, with the unemployment rate at 5.1%, for all of that, if you're not feeling it in your own economy, then all the headline numbers you can think of just don't matter. Today, we're going to get going with our coverage of next year's election, a series built along those lines called My Economy.
The life and the kind of job that I want.
Prosperity.
Providing for your children.
My head above water.
My economy.
My economy.
My economy.
All right, so here's the plan. Me out on the road talking to people about how their economy actually feels.
Come on, I will show you how to cook some fish, and then y'all may want to buy it because I know you've got to be hungry.
I'm a little hungry.
Which explains how I came to be standing in Townsend Kaiser's backyard in Greensboro, Alabama, watching him fry up some catfish. Population here is about 2,500 with an unemployment rate that's a pretty good 5.4%.
350 degrees, 3 to 4 minutes. They'll float up.
You've heard Townsend a bunch of times on the program the past couple of years.
But you don't want to put too many in there. The grease cools down.
He's a third-generation catfish farmer in West Central Alabama who found his way slowly to the family business.
And this is the moment to point out that you went to Auburn and got a degree in, like, psychology or something, right, Townsend?
That's correct. I wouldn't say I knew when I was a kid. At some point after high school, I got to wanting to come back home. I had been away for a while and just kind of explored a whole bunch of different options and decided I wanted to come back and raise fish.
A little bit more, Eric.
Raise catfish is kind of a misnomer, truth be told. What you really do is you haul them out of a giant pond, you scoop them up with a huge net that's been hooked up to a big crane, and you dump them
straight down
in a tanker truck.
This pond is probably 12 acres.
12 acres. Wow.
Okay. 12 to 15 acres. We have 700 acres of water right now and raise about 5 million pounds a year. Along with catfish, we have 500 or 600 cows and 300 or 400 acres of soybeans and 500 or 600 acres of timber.
Do you worry at all that you're doing too much? With the feed operation and the catfish and the cattle and the...
A little bit, but it takes this much for my brother's family and my family and my parents. It takes this much. We are extending ourselves a lot, but, you know, you have to take a risk and work hard to make it in this country, and so that's what we're trying to do.
The Kaiser family's been doing this for three generations through all of the changes in this economy the past couple of decades. And so I asked Bill Kaiser, Townsend's dad, what that's actually meant.
Physically, I had it harder 30 years ago. Mentally, he has it worse now. When I was his age, if I made a mistake, I could probably, if it wasn't a major mistake, I could overcome it with hard work. Okay? But at his age and my other son's age, if they make a mistake, hard work may not correct it.
That is a perfect answer. I can't argue with that. hardworking three employees when I, as early as I can remember, and now it's a little more mental work. It's still a lot of hard work, but we have three managers and 25 employees now to maybe do as well as he was doing 30 years ago.
25, 30 years ago, I wasn't wealthy, but I was growing, and we were doing well. If I wanted something, I went and got it. You had to watch what I wanted, but if I wanted something, I went and got it. I can't do that today. He can't do that today.
Hard work, and how sometimes that doesn't feel like enough. Opportunity, but also risk, wondering if it's all going to be all right. That's what that 5.4% unemployment rate looks like for Townsend, one part of how the economy feels to people living in Greensboro, Alabama.
So this is the main drag, right? It's the junction of, what, 69 and 25, whatever those are, state route. It's great, you know, small town Alabama, but there's nobody around, man.
It was lunchtime, maybe a little bit before we went out to Townsend's house, and I was looking for people to talk to. Ended up going into the library right there at the east end of those few blocks of Main Street that make up downtown. We found a young guy named Grayson McDermott using the computers. So I asked him, scale of 1 to 10, that same question I'd started with Townsend Kaiser. How does the economy feel to him?
About a 4 or 3.
4 or 3. Why a 4 or 3?
Not nothing kids can do or nothing grown people can do. We ain't even got no jobs for it.
What kind of jobs do you want? I mean, if you could have a job here, what would you be doing?
Factory job. Just labor, for real. Man labor. Regular man labor. You know what I'm saying? Just something for people to stay out, you know what I'm saying? Stay out the streets, stuff like that.
Manual labor to keep you off the streets. How old are you?
I'm 18.
So you're done with school?
No, I dropped out.
How come?
It just wasn't made for me.
School wasn't made for you? But you got to do something.
Yeah, get my GED. You know what I'm saying? Do what I got to do to get through life. That's it.
How come you stay here then? Why don't you go to a big city?
Some people can't afford to. I ain't got the money. I ain't got nowhere to go.
You're 18 years old. What's it going to be like when you're 25?
I ain't going to be around here. I'm going to go somewhere else. That's all I can do.
Go somewhere else. That's how Grayson McDermott's economy feels. Same town the Kaisers live in, different economic place. That somewhere else he's talking about, by the way, is mostly north, up Highway 69 to Tuscaloosa, about a half an hour or so. It's the same metropolitan statistical area, as labor statisticians like to say, so the same unemployment rate, 5.4%. But it is, as I said, a completely different economic world. That's where we're going to go tomorrow to pick up on this first part of our series, My Economy. You can check out all of our election year coverage at marketplace.org. And while you're there, please do tell us what your economy feels like to you. Here's a little global economy math for you. You add up the value of all the stuff that the U.S. exports, you subtract the value of all the stuff that we import, and you wind up with a figure known as the trade deficit. Now, technically, you could wind up with a trade surplus, but that's other countries, not us. We've had a deficit every year since 1974. Which gets me to this. The Commerce Department told us this morning that the trade deficit in September fell to its lowest level since this past spring. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson tells us what that might say about the American economy.
In September, the value of exports rose, the value of imports fell, which might sound like good news. Other people are buying more of our stuff, we're buying less of theirs.
I would caution that it might not be a permanent improvement.
Reality check brought to you by Robert Lawrence, professor of international trade and investment at the Harvard Kennedy School. Because this month aside, in the bigger picture,
what we have is weak growth in our trading partners and our goods becoming relatively more expensive because our currency has been rising. And on the other side of the coin, we have relatively stronger growth in the U.S. economy and imports becoming relatively cheaper.
A big cause of the shrinking trade deficit is our lower foreign fuel bill, thanks to the falling price of oil. And as Cornell University's Ishwar Prasad points out, the trade deficit in manufacturing actually rose.
The reality is that the manufacturing trade deficit is what affects jobs in the U.S., especially in the manufacturing sector.
And in general, counterintuitive as it may seem, strong imports can actually be a good economic indicator, says Dan Eikenson, director of the Cato Institute's Center for Trade Policy Studies.
Both consumers and businesses tend to import more when the economy is growing, and they tend to forego purchases, which tend to shrink imports when they're more concerned.
But as always, he says we shouldn't lean too heavily on 1 month's data.
It's just hard to read these tea leaves, quite honestly.
I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
Speaking of reading tea leaves, and we did not plan that segue, but let us pause here for a moment for a word about Janet Yellen. She's had a tough week, Dr. Yellen has, and it's only Wednesday. Yesterday, you might have heard that Donald Trump accused her of being in cahoots with President Obama to keep interest rates low. And then today, while she was testifying on the Hill about banking supervision and regulation, Congressman Brad Sherman, Democrat of California, well, you upped the ante a little bit.
God's plan is not for things to rise in the autumn. As a matter of fact, that's why we call it fall. Nor is it God's plan for things to rise in the winter through the snow. God's plan is that things rise in the spring. And so if you want to be good with the Almighty, you might want to delay until May.
I'm just going to note here that the Almighty is going to have to wait just about as long as we will to find out what Dr. Yellen is thinking. The next interest rate meeting for the Fed isn't until December the 16th and 15th. Up in Canada today, Justin Trudeau was sworn in as prime minister. He announced his new cabinet at the time, 15 men and 15 women. When asked why he went for gender parity, the prime minister said, and this is a direct quote, because it's 2015. That gets us to a study commissioned by the British government. It recommends smaller bonuses for bank bosses if they don't appoint more women to senior jobs. From London Marketplace's Stephen Beard has that story.
Fewer women reach the top in finance than in any other British industry. 60% of the workers in financial services here are female, but they fill less than 20% of executive posts. Sharon Thorne is a partner in one of the big four accounting firms. She agrees with the call to tackle the bankers and cut off their bonuses if they don't promote more women.
This is one particular policy that will grab people's attention. I think it could make a difference.
The study, to be published in full next year, calls for targets, public monitoring, and if the banks fail to meet those targets, personal financial penalties.
Let me start by saying I'm in favour of curbing bankers' bonuses, period.
Asmat Mohammed, head of the Institute of Recruiters, says more female financial executives will make for a more productive and perhaps more stable finance industry. Too much testosterone, he says, may have partly fuelled the last big crisis.
If there were more women in the boardroom, more of a diverse opinion in the boardroom, maybe what happened in 2008 wouldn't have happened.
But bank analyst Chris Wheeler disputes that, and he's very much opposed to the banks being forced to hire more female executives.
I don't like any form of positive discrimination where you're choosing between a man and a lady to make a decision not so much on the quality of the person but the gender. And I'm absolutely convinced that's not right.
Today, the gender study was warmly welcomed by a female government minister. Mandatory targets seem unlikely, but the pressure is on to redress the imbalance in bank boardrooms. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Coming up.
It's dangerous to have a barrel of oil in your 400-square-foot New York apartment.
I imagine it is, and yet she's still trying to buy one. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is off 50 points today, 50 points, 0.25%, closed at 17,867. The NASDAQ gave back 2 points. That's less than a 10%. Finished at 5142. The S&P 500 off 7 points, 1/3%. Ended things at 2102. All of that caution on word and interest rate increase is still a possibility in December. So said Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen. We talked about her testimony a little earlier. It is, quote, a live possibility, she said. to use her words from that testimony. A gloomy profit forecast from Time Warner Incorporated sent a chill through the media sector. Time Warner and Viacom both down 6.5%. The Walt Disney Company off almost 2% today. Tesla posted its biggest loss in more than 2 years, but said it would speed up production of its electric cars. Investors cheered, as investors are wont to do on those kinds of news. Shares in Tesla Motors up more than 11%. Facebook reported profits after the bell. Forget the dollar amounts. They are making plenty of cash. Here's the grabber. The company now says it has a billion users, more than a billion users, every single day. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Drug and alcohol abuse is, apart from being a big problem for society as a whole, it's just plain expensive. Jail costs, police, and often hospital and support costs. And a lot of the time, what society does doesn't do much to take care of substance abuse problems. So some law enforcement officials are trying something different out there. They are offering a powerful but pricey addiction treatment drug. Wyoming Public Radio's Miles Bryan has that story.
26-year-old Cameron Largent lives with his mom in Rock Springs, Wyoming. Most afternoons, he's deep into the video game World of Warcraft.
So my job is to run around and heal people that need healed.
What level are you?
I'm as high as you can get, which is 100.
Largent has had a lot of time to level up recently. He's not drinking for the first time in years. By the time he was 16, he says he was drunk four nights a week.
18, I was drunk every single night. 19, 20 years old, I was just drinking all day, every day.
Largent was in and out of jail for DUIs and a burglary charge and spent years in different kinds of treatment programs. It was while in jail a few months ago that Largent was selected to be part of a trial program using Vivitrol, a monthly shot that treats alcohol and opiate addiction. He got his first shot on his last day in jail about a month ago and says the effect was immediate. Before, if he heard someone open, say, a can of soda,
the first thing that enters my brain is somebody's drinking a beer, and I want them a beer. After the Vivitrol, things like that, triggers like that, they just didn't even enter my mind. You know, the craving isn't there.
Now Largent is trying to get a job at a local coffee shop. Turnarounds like his are what has motivated law enforcement across the country to start offering Vivitrol in jails and drug courts in recent years. Vivitrol's maker, a company called Alchemies, says it has donated doses of the drug to about 30 programs since Vivitrol was FDA approved in 2006. It donated enough free doses to the Rock Springs area earlier this year to give 25 offenders like Largent a shot on their way out of jail and a shot a month later. Local addiction specialist Dr. Alina Cherniak says the main reason Vivitrol is so popular is that once-a-month dose.
It eliminates the concerns that we have in medicine with patient compliance, meaning it doesn't require a patient to remember to take the medication.
But just because you don't have to remember to take Vivitrol doesn't mean it's easy to obtain, especially if you aren't getting free doses. Without subsidies, a shot of Vivitrol costs about $1,200. Terrence Walton is with the National Association of Drug Court Professionals, which develops and monitors rehab programs nationwide.
I think it's probably more expensive, even with insurance, than many clients can afford.
Walton points out that Vivitrol's maker is donating the drug now as a way to get public agencies to pay for it down the road. But he says Vivitrol alone is not a long-term solution.
It's not a wonder drug. When it is truly effective is when it's used in combination with counseling to address the underlying issues.
But Vivitrol's ability to shut down cravings and the fact that it keeps you from feeling a buzz if you do slip up and try and get high has made it popular with law enforcement.
If you don't have the craving for 30 days, you're probably going to be productive for 30 days. And we don't see that revolving door.
Dwayne Pacheco is Rock Springs Chief of Police. He says most crime in the area is alcohol and drug related. Beds in the local jail cost taxpayers $125 a night. Pacheco says Vivitrol may be pricey, but it's cheaper than the alternative.
If we can get them detoxed and get them working, it's a lot better deal for the community.
Back in his mom's basement, Cameron Largent says he hopes his routine of Vivitrol and counseling will be enough to stay sober. Well, that and a whole lot more World of Warcraft. In Rock Springs, Wyoming, I'm Miles Bryan for Marketplace.
Crude oil closed down about 4% today, a little bit more than $46 a barrel for U.S. crude. Given its volatility, both literally and price-wise, oil is not a simple commodity to turn a profit on. Because if it was, everybody would be trying. Bloomberg's Tracy Alloway actually did try in a piece headlined, "That Time I Tried to Buy an Actual Barrel of Crude Oil." Tracy, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Why did you decide to buy crude oil?
It's an excellent question. What happened was back in 2008, 2009, there was this really interesting thing happening in the oil market. Basically, what it was is you could buy a barrel of oil on the spot market for immediate delivery. Mm-hmm. And in the futures market, it would be worth a lot more. So essentially, if you had the capability, you could buy a barrel of oil on the cheap and then sell a futures contract promising to deliver it to someone at a later date and make a profit.
And so here we are now at 2015. You finally get around to it and you discover that it's just not easy to buy crude oil.
No, surprise, surprise, there's a reason there's not a vibrant retail market for physical crude oil, as I would soon discover. I had, in all honesty, given up on my long-held dream to have a barrel of crude oil at this point. But I happened to be in a bar, and I met a gas trader and his broker, who also happened to specialize in something called orphan barrels. So these are sort of single or small lots of barrels of oil. And after talking with them, I was invited to take this tour down to the refineries in New Jersey and see if I could actually get some oil.
And you did? Is that the upshot?
No.
Oh, all right.
No. You cannot just take a boat to an oil refinery in New Jersey, load up a barrel and say, thanks, see you later. And also, as I would discover many, many times, crude oil is a dangerous thing. There's this thing called hydrogen sulfide, and it evaporates from barrels of oil, and you can basically suffocate to death if you don't monitor it very, very closely. It's dangerous to have a barrel of oil in your 400-square-foot New York apartment. So, instead of getting a barrel of oil, we arranged something slightly different, and I got roughly a liter of crude oil sent to me by FedEx.
You weren't really trying to make money on this, but in theory, you would have bought it and then sold it to somebody. And in fact, you did, right?
I did. I sold a futures contract to a former colleague of mine. In theory, I've made 7 cents on this trade, a whopping 7 cents, right? The spot price of the oil was something like 24 cents, and the futures contract was for 31 cents. So that's how we get the 7 cent profit. Of course, this is nowhere near like what it would be in the real world of oil trading. So not factored into that equation are insurance costs, transport costs, various other logistical challenges like that.
So do you actually now have to hold on to that liter of oil until the delivery date? I mean, where is this jar of oil?
I do. The futures contract is for March. The jar of oil is currently in my bathroom because I figured if it was going to explode, I would rather do it in my bathtub than on my couch or somewhere else.
Do you go and invent it every now and then? What do you do?
I look at it. I shake it up a little bit because otherwise, here's another thing I learned. If you don't mix oil every once in a while, it starts to separate and you end up getting very, very sweet crude at the top, sweet light crude, and a sort of dark sludge at the bottom. So I need it to be in peak condition for when I deliver it to my counterparty in March.
What does it smell? I mean, if you open it up and take a sniff, what does it smell like?
It smells like sulfur, you know, rotten eggs. It doesn't smell pleasant. It is very, very tightly sealed and capped. So I'm not smelling it too often, nor would I recommend that.
Tracy Alloway, she is the executive editor at Bloomberg Markets. Her piece is called "That Time I Tried to Buy an Actual Barrel of Crude Oil." Tracy, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much, guys.
All right, this final note before we go, I want to circle back to our catfish farmer, Townsend Kaiser, and his dad, Bill. We spent a whole lot of time with him down in Alabama, most of which you didn't get to hear, which is too bad. So I want to share one last thing with you. Bill Kaiser showing me what they do with the bits of the catfish that don't get eaten. They've started up a fish protein processing plant. Here you go.
And I don't know whether y'all want to go look up and see what's going in there or not.
Wow. Oh, really? Oh, no. That's terrible.
Not real pretty, is it?
Oh, my. You didn't warn me. Oh, my God. It's catfish.
It's every part of the catfish.
It's catfish guts that, oh, man. To you, this is money, right?
That's right. Smell like fresh dollar bills.
It is. You're going to have to take my word for it. Totally worth a look at the video we shot of that whole thing. We've got it, lots more videos and pictures we shot down in Alabama, the rest of our election stories, and the results of our first national economic survey that we released last week, the Marketplace Edison Research Poll. It's all at marketplace.org. Also, tell us where you think we ought to go next. Suggestions? Welcome. All right, we're out of here. The Dow off 50 points today, 0.25%. The NASDAQ gave back 2 points less than 0.1%. The S&P 500 off 7 points, 0.1%. Chris Clark, Stephen Colon, Jake Gorski, Bill Lance, Garrett Lang, Jeff Peters, Daniel Ramirez, and Charlton Thorpe engineered the broadcast for us. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.